Good morning. You now have access to turn your cameras on. So if you could please turn your cameras on to participate in Gita study. Thank you.
When you turn your camera on, we have a monitor. I have one right here in front of me and I can see you. And then it feels like you're in the room with us, which is fantastic. It's really helpful. Really, really helpful. So please turn your cameras on. Thank you so much. Plus, you can see each other.
Prabha, will you scroll back so we can see if this is a good view? Is that okay?
I can put you on just if you want to see what it looks like. Let's see here.
That's kind of blurry.
That's because sometimes the computer,
Because we have a bad monitor. Let's get a new one. I like that.
That's better,
Thank you for your help.
You comfortable there?
I'm working on it.
Very good.
My lower half gets cold.
So nice to see you people from the, what do I call that? Sierra foothills? Yes, okay, thank you. And Oregon and Los Osos. I don't know where some of you live. Portland, I think we saw Seattle. I don't know, does Pam live in Menlo Park? Somewhere up there? I don't know where, Kanwa? I don't know where you live.
Kwana?
Nearby. Nearby Sakalpa? Yeah. Samadhi? You remember that show when I was a kid anyway? They'd say romper stomper domper do.
Oh yeah.
I see Anne and I see you. You remember that show?
Romper room,
that was it. Yeah, they never said Sundari, they never said Brahmi. They should have, though. Oh, we got Colorado in the house. Wonderful. Okay. So, welcome to our 2025 Bhagavad Gita study. My plan is that we will meet weekly. If you go to the website, to the little button at the bottom that says 2025 programs, something like that, and click on it, you'll see a link for today's Bhagavad Gita study. And because it's weekly, we didn't list every one of them. But if you click on that link, there'll be updates of the schedule, and it will show up on the calendar, just not on that list. But there are a few days like Thanksgiving Day and Christmas and the day when we have silent retreat on a Thursday. There are a few days where we won't be meeting. As Yogacharya O'Brien, Azumaji is on sabbatical for this year, she asked me to carry on with weekly Gita study by reading her text from the previous Gita studies that she has offered, and then sharing a little inspiration of my own, and having time for us to connect and share our insights and questions and such. So we're starting from the beginning. And you know, sometimes she went way off script. She had her notes, but then what she shared was something a bit different. And so we're going to have the blessing of hearing what she had planned to share, and on the podcast, having the other. So having the enrichment of both. I encourage you, as we are all engaging in this year of power of attunement and really opening ourselves to the deepest attunement with Umaji, with ourselves, with God, that we can experience, I encourage you to consider this opportunity for Gita study as a powerful way for us to deepen our attunement, especially with Umaji, as we're joining to hear her words that she has written, because when approached in that way, the guru's words carry a vibrational essence, even in writing. So when spoken, yes, it's powerful to be there or to listen, but even in writing. You know that when you read Autobiography of a Yogi, right? Mm-hmm. You can feel Paramahansaji's presence in it. And when you come to a part that was edited by someone else, you can tell, oh, he didn't actually write that sentence. You can feel it. So there's power in the written words of a guru. So we're going to begin with our prayer for study. And for those who are new to this, you can find it on the CSC website under Yogacharya O'Brien. There's a little drop down that's got prayers. I think it says prayers.
Morning prayers.
Morning prayers, something like that. All these prayers are there, and recordings of her chanting them.
Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karvavahai, Tejasvi Navaditamastu, Mavivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
May the divine protect us. May the divine nourish us. Let us work together with enthusiasm and strength. May our study bring illumination of consciousness. May there be harmony between us. Om. Peace, peace, peace. So first I'll share the teachings that Umaji gave me. She gave me her, you know, all her word docs. So I'm going to be reading this. It's often said that Kriya Yoga is intentional living. It's intentional, spiritually conscious living. We all wonder how to do that. How to do that in everyday life, filled with so many responsibilities and demands on our time and attention. How do we live fully, completely? How do we live a fully, completely spiritual life? And how is it possible to wake up spiritually, to be enlightened, which is the goal of yoga practice? Bhagavad Gita is a very practical manual for telling us exactly how to do that. How to be active in the world, how to live our lives fully, and how to be awake and then live skillfully. In the tradition of Kriya Yoga, which I represent, the masters in this tradition have all written commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita. They all taught it, and they all wrote about it, of course, with the exception of Bhavtar Babaji, who really provided the inspiration for his disciple, Lahiri Mahasaya, to write his seminal commentaries. Although Lahiri did not actually write his commentaries, his disciples took many notes from his various teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and compiled them. One of the things that we find in our lineage of Kriya Yoga with each of the masters, Lahiri Mahasaya, Swami Sri Teshwar, Paramahansa Yogananda, and Yogacharya O'Brien's guru, Roy Eugene Davis, is that they all looked at the esoteric significance of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. Meaning, how it is an allegory for how we understand our psychological makeup and our spiritual consciousness. You know, how does what is taught and the very premise of the Gita reflect what we're dealing with in terms of being a spiritual being, expressing through this mortal body and mind? So right away in the first chapter of the Gita, which is where we're beginning today, our gurus taught that what is happening in this battle is really a battle, in a sense, for the soul life. The forces that are at play are the various viewpoints of the mind, the various tensions that go on between the lower drives in the mental field and our desires, and the pull always of our soul or of higher consciousness to fulfill its divine destiny. In the weeks ahead, I'll talk more about the setting of the Gita and the characters of the Gita, but today I really want to talk about how it is relevant for us, for me, for you, today, right now. We can't hear this enough times, can we?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've been hearing it for over 30 years, and I appreciate hearing it again every time. I'm like, oh, that, yes. She goes on, we want to know how it's relevant for us today, right now, because that's the way we are inclined to study it. That's when it's meaningful to us. We will pick it up and study it. It's one thing to study a work historically. And then there is a history of an actual battle, which takes place in Kurukshetra in India, which is, it's of some interest to know. The historical battle that took place is recorded in the Mahabharata, and the Bhagavad Gita is an excerpt of that great epic. It's a part that is pulled out. It's this pristine teaching on how to live. When we look at it, it's not just as a battle that simply was something that took place historically, but as a battle that's going on every day for us. We ask ourselves, what is that battle and how is it happening in our life? What is that battle and how is it happening in our life? How is it relevant today? You know, it might be in our personal life, might be in our family, it might be in our nation, it might be in our world. She says, then I think, when we look at it this way, then I think we want to read the Gita. We can't wait. We can't wait really to understand what it means and how it can teach us about how to face the very challenges that are before us. Many famous people study the Bhagavad Gita. For Mahatma Gandhiji, it was a Bible on how to live dharmically, how to live the truth. Being engaged in the political realm in life. And that was amazing what he could do. He said that anytime he faced a problem, he would find instruction. He would find solace in the Gita. And that he approached the Gita like a mother. And Yogacharya O'Brien Umaji wrote, that has really been my own way of approaching the Bhagavad Gita. Like a child who would go to the mother asking for nourishment, asking for support, asking for guidance, and trusting that it would be there. She says, for 40 plus years, I've been studying the Bhagavad Gita, and I have only barely begun to understand and to benefit from the riches that are there. For me, it's been 30 plus years, and I can say ditto. I know many of you join me in this. Always when I have approached the Gita, a gift is given to me. Every day a gift is given to me. But I find that that gift requires a certain sort of receptivity, which is knowing that there will be some nourishment and some guidance. That is my prayer, she says. That is my prayer. As we have this time together to reflect on the Bhagavad Gita, that you find some sense of solace, that you find inspiration coming from within you, because that is the source in you. And that's what the Gita teaches us, that the truth comes from within. But when we study the Gita, it will spark that inner knowing. So the setting for the Bhagavad Gita is, of course, during a time of great war, and it's on a battlefield. And in the very first verse of the Gita, one of the first things that we encounter is the question, what's happening here? This is really the question throughout the Gita. What's going on? If we look at this battlefield as occurring in our own life, this question that we are to ask, what's going on here? What's going on in my own life? What's really happening in my life? What are the forces at play? The first stanza in the first book or the first chapter of the Gita, and this chapter is often referred to as the Yoga of Arjuna's Despondency. And Arjuna, the principal character, the hero, is a warrior who is, of course, counseled by Lord Krishna, the higher self. in an esoteric sense, the allegorical view, Arjuna is the seeking soul. He is our own self, learning to live in the world spiritually. And Krishna is the higher self, the Lord of love, seated in our own hearts. So the question that begins the battle, first stanza in the first book, says, Dhritarashtra spoke, when they were in the field of virtue, in the field of the Kurus assembled together, desiring to fight, what did my army and that of the sons of Pandu do, Sanjay? So this is a question that is asked by the blind king. It's kind of like a Shakespearean play. Mm-hmm. A play that's going on inside of a play. It begins with this narration of the blind king asking, who's going to win the ability to rule this kingdom? Who's going to win the ability to rule this kingdom? When Paramahansaji wrote his commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, he said, that's a question we should ask ourselves every day. Who's going to win? Will it be the soul? Will it be our higher drives and tendencies? Or will it be our lower drives? Will it be clarity or will it be confusion? Who's going to win? Will it be hatred and aversion? Or will it be love? Will it be compassion? Will it be acceptance, forgiveness? Or will it be resentment? Will it be love? All of these different qualities, all of these things, are really the warriors in our own inner kingdom. They're all there. They are the ones gathered on the battlefield. Paramahansaji said, that's a question we can ask ourselves. Who's going to win? In the beginning of every day, we can ask ourselves, who's going to win today? And at the end of our day, we can ask ourselves, who won? Who won today? You know, somebody asked me if it'd be a good thing to journal and take notes while studying the Bhagavad Gita. And we all have different ways of learning, different styles. So taking notes is good for some. Just listening is good for others. But throughout this year, as we engage in the power of attunement, we might in our power of attunement journal or whatever journal we're using for the year, every day, at the end of the day, ask ourselves, who won? Was it love or was it resentment? Now, of course, you know, this is not judging ourselves. It's just a way to help us stay on track. So just to take an assessment of this field in our life, it begins with saying, this is the field, this is Dharmakshetra, Kurukshetra, the field of virtue and the field of action. Or Dharma, the field of righteousness, the field of the body, mind, and action. This is where the battle is taking place. And the king, who represents the blind mind, who is unable to really see, asks the narrator, that's Sanjay, representing the faculty of discernment, what's going on? Then the battle is laid out with all the different characters representing these different viewpoints, our lower drives and tendencies, our higher drives and tendencies. And there's something very important that happens in this first chapter. Arjuna, who's a consummate warrior, is poised to go into battle. And he asks Krishna, the Lord, to drive his chariot into the center of the battle so that he can see clearly what he's up against. So he can see clearly what's happening here, what's going on. So it really echoes that first question of the Bhagavad Gita. What's happening here? What did my army and that of the sons of Pandu do, Sanjay? What's going on in this battle? In the 21st verse, and what is really the introductory chapter to the whole teachings that are going to unfold, we have this request of the seeking soul that is, let me see clearly. Arjuna then spoke these words to Krishna, O Lord of the earth, cause my chariot to stand in the middle between the two armies, O imperishable one. So it begins with this question. And I think as we begin this exploration together, we can ask that question ourselves. O Lord, help me to see clearly where I am in my life right now. Where am I on my spiritual path, on my spiritual journey? What are the forces at play in my life with regard to living my dharma, living with higher purpose? What am I called to do? Am I doing it? What do I experience as the conflicts in my life about fulfilling the dharma of fully enlightened, fully awakened life in this lifetime? What do I experience as the impediments to fulfilling my dharma? Let me see clearly what my life is really about and what I am really up to and whether or not I am on track. What is the battle that I face with my own distractions, my own despair, my own lack of self-confidence? Let me see clearly, Lord, what that is. Now, a really important thing to understand is that Arjuna is a consummate warrior. He's a real deal. And at the end of the first chapter, the chapter that is called the Yoga of Despair or Despondency or the Yoga of Arjuna's Sorrow, at the end of it, this consummate warrior is filled with doubt. He's filled with despair. He thinks there's no possible way to succeed. Does this feel so familiar? So what does that mean for us? What does it mean in terms of how this could apply to our own spiritual calling? In our tradition of Kriya Yoga, the masters have been very clear that we are here to awaken fully in this lifetime. This is very inspiring for us. Now, it's not just for some great souls that other people say, they're awake, they're awake, they're awake, but not you. No, we are here to fully awaken now. We're here to fulfill that dharma and to live with higher purpose. And in order for us to do that, most of us have to make changes. We have to make changes in how we live. We have to make changes in what we're doing every day. There are habits that we have to overcome. Even if we've been on the path for decades, habits raise up like, I don't know, a weed that found water and sunshine. There are habits we have to overcome. There's changes we have to make in the relationships we have in life. And we often think to ourselves, this is not going to be easy. And people are going to be upset with me when I make this change. I really don't know how to do it. When we really look at what we know in the deepest heart of our hearts and our soul of soul, when we really look at what we have to do to live out our higher purpose, we think, this is really difficult. And I'm not sure I can do it. Because people in my family are not going to understand me, or our friends are not going to understand me if I go for it fully. Not just like I'm on the path, but if I go for it fully, I'm going to disappoint some people. I'm going to fail. I'm going to have to give up certain things that I don't really want to give up. We have all kinds of conflicts that go on inside of us when we are in touch with what it is we really need to do to follow the highest way of life. And of course, this battlefield is laid out in this first chapter. What we see when we come to it, and with the beauty of the Gita, is that the Lord of Love, the higher self, is present there from the very beginning with Arjuna. He's not out there on his own. So even while there's doubt about how can I do it, and how is it possible, the Lord of Love, the higher true self, is right there, already present. And the teaching is going to unfold from this moment forth. The very fact that Arjuna has resistance, has doubting questions and wonders, how is all of this going to play out, is in a sense a sign of readiness. Our doubts are a sign of readiness. Because if we don't know what it is we are called to do, we have no doubt. We're just going on blindly. Get it? Blindly? Uma goes on, I want to say to you that this is a very important juncture in the spiritual life. When we have a calling, and we all do, and when we're in touch with that calling, it should be high enough, it should be spiritually bright enough that we don't know how we're going to do it on our own. That's where the Gita begins. That's really beautiful. It's really good for us to know that this personification of the soul, the seeking soul, Arjuna, is not without skill. He's highly skilled. He's not an impetuous youth that just running out into battle. He has stopped. He has stopped. He's feeling everything that he needs to feel. And that's not a bad thing. It's a good thing because he's looking deeply. He's asking, what is going to be the outcome of this? Then we find as the Gita proceeds, what happens is he turns toward the Lord Krishna and he says, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. Help me. Now, I can hear you thinking, even though you're there, or there. Yeah, but Uma's gone for a year. Well, we have to remind ourselves that Uma's guru, Roy, lived in Atlanta, Georgia. And Uma lives in Santa Cruz, California. She received guidance from Roy regularly, and I don't mean by email. In consciousness. So we have that same connection. We can ask, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. God and gurus, help me. And of course, that's where the teachings begin to pour out from the Lord about how to approach our own Dharma, how to approach this way of skillful living one day at a time, how to do it. The rest of the teachings are all about skillful action, the yoga of skillful action. So I hope you'll join me as we continue to move forward past this opening scene on the battlefield and discover how it is that we can learn to live skillfully and to fulfill our Dharma, to fulfill our potential as spiritual beings in this lifetime. So I have, you know, what can I possibly add to what Uma has said? Well, nothing. But a few brief thoughts. In Yogacharya O'Brien's teaching, she shared about Dhritarashtra, the blind king. And the blind king symbolizes manas, the lower mind, which is guided by desires, restlessness, and attachment to the senses. Though blind, he listens to his minister, Sanjay. Minister meaning someone who brings him information in this context. Sanjay, who represents our conscience, the inner voice connected to truth. So while it's a good sign when the lower mind seeks input from conscience, it often resists or distorts that guidance, preferring to remain in its limited habitual patterns. So we can gain another layer to this understanding by looking at the blind king's wife, Gandhari. And unlike her husband, the wife is not blind. However, she chooses, when they are married, to blindfold herself. What? A symbolic act of aligning her vision with his. What vision? The blind vision. Gandhari represents buddhi, our inner intelligence, which, when wedded to the blind lower mind, can lose its higher potential. Instead of guiding us toward clarity and wisdom, it becomes a servant of our limitations. So we are divine beings. We're divine beings with infinite potential. But we often blind ourselves to this truth by misusing our intelligence. So when buddhi is blindfolded by its allegiance to the lower mind, there are four ways I'm going to name that it might manifest. See if any of these resonate with you. I hope they don't, but I know they will. Rationalizing the status quo. Well, I do have this habit of watching 8 hours of television a day, And it's really necessary because my dog likes the TV to be on. Whatever. Rationalizing the status quo. Instead of seeking, questioning or seeking higher truths, our intelligence defends the comforts of the familiar. We say, this is just who I am. Deal with it. We avoid the risks of growing. That's number one, rationalizing the status quo. Number two is focusing outward through the senses. Buddhi becomes preoccupied with satisfying the mind's endless desires, which keeps us in a state of restlessness because they are insatiable. Rationalizing the status quo, focusing outward through the senses. The third one, distracting us from the present moment. When Buddhi is blindfolded by its allegiance to lower mind, it might be distracting us from the present moment. It keeps the mind spinning in the past or future, away from the peace of the here and now. And then possibly the saddest one, wah, wah, sabotaging our spiritual journey. In its distorted form, intelligence creates excuses and doubts that block progress, like, I'll get there, but I'm not ready yet. Maybe when I'm 80, and for those who are 80, maybe when I'm 85. Those who are 85, maybe when I'm 90. And those who are 90, I wish I had done it when I was 20. I'm not ready yet. Or this path is too difficult. I'm going to just stay at a superficial level. So later in the Gita, a profound insight into this is found in chapter 18, verse 31. When the Buddhi is rajasic, restless, it has a distorted and confused understanding of dharma and adharma, what's good for the soul and what creates more obstacles for it. Thus, it often errs in deciding what to do and what not to do. I had a personal experience with these teachings recently while reflecting on this very commentary and working on it. I got distracted by a communication from another person, and it's not any of you or any of you. I got distracted by a communication from another person, and it contained information about this person was telling me that they had decided they were just not going to do this thing that we had agreed they would do and was very important. You can relate to this kind of thing. And the not doing it had a domino effect on me and many others. And my mind became very reactive. The vrittis were swirling around in my mind. I felt so righteous. And then a little bit defensive. And of course, my controlling nature was just right there. Who do you think you are? All of this was just churning inside of me. My samskaras were in full bloom. They offered me plenty of unhelpful reactions. You know, to just ignore the communication. Or to justify what is needed. Or to respond with frustration. Or to complain, which just a couple of nights ago I took a vow to not do. If you're in the Power of Attunement program. Then I remembered, thank God, these teachings that I was preparing. And my Moody, clouded by restlessness, was unable to see clearly what was dharmic in that moment. I was blind. But that realization was a gift. I understood that communication that I received was an opportunity to practice patience and discernment rather than react impulsively. So at the end of my night last night, I could say, who won? Well, I saw the battlefield. Which one did I choose? Yogananda teaches, the mind must be trained to respond to life with calmness and wisdom, not with agitation and emotion. That is the way to free ourselves from suffering. So, you know, this was my lesson. When buddhi is rajasic, it leads us into confusion and regret. But when it's calm and attuned to higher wisdom, it becomes a guiding light. So we can practice recognizing when we are blinded or we blindfolded ourselves, when we're being swayed by restlessness or preconceived notions. So when a challenging moment arises, we can ask ourselves, is this decision coming from clarity or agitation? You know, am I just going to respond to that person and say, who do you think you are? Or am I going to wait and have a little clarity? Am I listening to my conscience or justifying my blind habits? And we all do both from time to time. So we have just a couple of minutes to share any insights before we conclude, any thoughts, any questions, ahas. Yes.
What was the third one you said?
The third of those 4 points.
Mm-hmm.
Did you like that one?
I think I did.
Did you go blind about that one?
I can't remember it now.
Blind and deaf.
So I must need to remember that one.
Distracting us from the present moment. It keeps the mind spinning in the past or the future, away from the peace that's available here and now. You were so unpresent, you couldn't hear it. Sorry. Others? Questions, comments, insights? Happiness that we're starting Gita study again. Mm. Ishwari?
I just I wanted to comment on when you mentioned patience, having patience with your situation. Because I don't know, I think it's just a point of light, that's all.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, when we just take a moment, it allows the light to come through. We can see clearly.
But it's patient with yourself, patient with them, patient with, there's a message for me here. You know, I better quiet down so I can hear what this might be.
Yes, exactly. And we can do it with a little situation like this or a big national political one. We can take the same stance. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that to you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know why. Or a global one with all the tragedies in our world. We can take a broader mind with that. Just we may as well learn. Here we are in it. Mm-hmm. We may as well learn from it, right? Mm-hmm. Did you raise your hand?
No.
Okay. Mukti Devi?
Thank you so much for beginning yoga studies again and restarting them, and I
can
love
you turn it up.
I'll make
you
sure.
May need to speak up.
Yeah.
Go again.
There, that's probably better too. I just first thank you so much for restarting Gita study and giving us an opportunity to reconnect with things from the beginning. I've wanted that to better process it. And I loved the part when you're talking about Buddhi either being aligned with the lower mind or our highest self. And it's reminding me of when Umaji teaches us to use the mind to go beyond the mind.
That's right.
And I've always been a little puzzled by that phrase, because sometimes I feel like my mind is not in my control and I get frustrated with it. And this is a little more clear, and it also makes me connect with our year of attunement, because it seems to me that this is the way to use the mind, and that I don't need to micromanage it. I just need to hold God and Guru's Umaji, especially in consciousness, and that just like when we focus on something, we bring ourselves in, our vibrations become part of, they become the same. You know, we vibrate more on the same plane. I don't need to know how Umaji or any of our gurus or God is going to arrange things to go well. I just have to allow myself to surrender to becoming in alignment with that same high level of thinking, and then it will come through me. I don't have to figure it out. I just have to let it come.
And yes, thank you. And the part about using the mind to go beyond the mind and thinking, oh, I can't do that because I don't have control of it. When you let manas be in charge, you don't have control of it.
Yes.
But I know you know this, but through deep superconscious meditation, Buddhi becomes illumined and the soul light takes over. And then we can use the mind, when Buddhi is clear, we can use the mind to go beyond the mind.
That really helps, Sundari. Thank you very much.
Meditating on Om helps with that. Brahmi, I know some of you need to leave because it's time, so we'll take a few more minutes for those who would like to stay a few minutes. This went a little longer because I had this whole setup to do as it was our first time. So Brahmi, can you unmute yourself?
Oh, maybe she cannot.
Mukti, can she unmute herself? Okay. Oh, there she comes.
I've been able to unmute myself now. This has been so wonderful. Thank you, Acharya. For many years, I have wondered, why did Gandhari, the queen, blindfold herself when her husband was blind and he had responsibilities to the kingdom? So that's always frustrated me to resolve the symbolism of that. So yes. I'm so thankful today and at peace to have that resolved that she symbolizes the intentionally blindfolded intellect, buddhi.
Right.
And so there's no access to intuition or conscience. And so that is so great.
Well, that's not so great, but yeah, knowing about it is great.
You understand that that is what is symbolized there? That feels
yeah.
like a blindfold removed.
Yes, and, thank you.
Yeah, of a deeper understanding of the Gita, not only that, but in my own life and relationships, of
yes.
when I'm allowing myself to be guided by the blindness of so-called others or the
yep.
mind in others.
That's right. When are we blindfolding ourselves?
Yes, yes.
Thinking it's going to help us in that relationship.
Yeah, so bows of gratitude to one and all, and to you and Umaji.
Thank you. Nice to see you. Cynthia?
Yes, the dark self, when it comes up, I'm noticing that it's like an alert system, that I'm going the wrong way, you know? So sometimes it's hard to overcome it. It's like I have to hire a guard that
yes.
you know, a referee, you know.
Yes.
So I'm going to work on that. I'm going to create some sort of archetype and name it so that I can chat with it, you know? Maybe that will help.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. Thank you for sharing that. And I love the vision of it's a referee. Yeah. So maybe I'll think about the Gita as a basketball game. And we have the Warriors and the Celtics. And who won? Oh, Sundari. I like that idea. There's a referee who's kind of helping keep things in order. That's a beautiful thought.
I like your metaphor.
Yes. Thank you all for your time. I look forward to being with you next week. What, Mukti?
No. Sorry, I was just wondering if these sessions will be recorded and accessible. No, they're recorded. Will they be accessible so we can listen again?
Yes, I asked. That's why I asked you to send it a link to me and Matthew, and he is going to put links on the to the recordings on the page where the dates are scheduled. I believe that's where they're going, but he'll make it somewhere noticeable. So as we leave, let us keep our booty aligned with truth. As Yogananda advises, be calmly active and actively calm. The restless mind disturbs the waters of the soul, but a calm mind reflects divine wisdom. So let us be calmly active and actively calm. Om.
Thank you so much.